This is Audible.
Audible Original Publishing presents Andrea Vernon and the Corporation for Ultra-Human Protection. Written by Alexander C. Kane. Performed by Bonnie Turpin. Chapter 1. Ms. Persephone O., Vice President of Sales and Operations. 7 months of searching online job listings, mailing and emailing resumes, updating LinkedIn, politely laughing at recruiters' bad jokes, and waiting had resulted in, up to this moment, 17 form rejection emails and one phone interview for what Andrea had sussed out to be a pyramid scheme. 7 months of unemployment and no movement. And now, a laser cutting through her wall. As the laser steadily neared the completion of its full circle, a 6-foot diameter slab of wall was about to... Would it fall? Would someone push it? She could hear Mr. and Mrs. Vlavianos through that very wall most nights. Were the Vlavianoses lasering open the wall? More likely, this event was connected to the resume she had submitted 5 minutes earlier for administrative assistant, must be willing to never ask questions. Ever. No questions. Typing skills preferred. No questions. The idea of a job where she could never ask a question sounded ideal. Currently, she filled her days asking herself questions. Why a European Studies / English double major? Why a minor in psychology? Would she ever finish her novel, The Courtship of Chancellor Metternich, a deep dive into the complex relationships that formed the man who created modern Europe? Why had she not written more during her unemployment? Was the book getting too sexual? Or was that the direction the book needed to go? What could be inside her underfurnished Queens, New York studio apartment that was worth lasering down a wall? What if they hit a pipe? With a single shove, the circular slice slipped free and landed with a mighty thurp on the floor. Seated on the futon that functioned as her bed, couch, and office, she considered running. No, she decided. Let's see how this plays out. Through the newly created portal stepped a man in a dark gray jumpsuit and black gas mask, who said, "Andrea Vernon? I'm here to take you to a job interview." Before she could speak, her front door opened, and an identically dressed man with an identical gas mask stepped in and said, "Andrea Vernon, I'm here to..." The two men regarded one another for a brief moment before the door user sighed. "She sent you too?" The laser cutter nodded. "I should have tried the door." "Well, I was just lucky it was unlocked." It was then that she passed out from the gas. Andrea's eyes opened to see painfully bright blurs of light. "Welcome to Cup," said a woman with a melodic yet somehow gruff southern accent. "Sweetheart, you're just going to have to forgive us for the lack of hospitality." Her eyes slowly adjusting to the light, Andrea could now see the petite woman seated behind an imposing oak desk. The nameplate read, "Ms. Persephone O." "Do you want something to drink? Sweet tea? I just brewed it fresh." "Yes, thank you," Andrea responded groggily. Her head filled with questions, but she needed a job, and this job required a willingness to never ask. Ms. O's office was arranged perfectly. Everything set together neatly and in its place. A simple olive green vase, a framed 1930s-era subway map, a black-and-white sketch of a man riding a bronco at rodeo. Her hair and makeup were perfect works of minimalist art. Her toned arm flexed as she poured the tea into a blue glass with the word "cup" printed in bright orange letters on it. Only one thing seemed out of place. "You're wondering about the Hawaiian shirt, aren't you? Bless your heart for not asking. You are as polite as a sheepdog at sunset. See, It's Hawaiian shirt day here in the office. Not my choice, mind you. Not my choice one bit. But I am a team player. Oh, and I'm sorry about your apartment. I'm without an administrative assistant, and I have not had to handle this recruitment business in a while. I meant to send one person, and I sent two, and they just lasered your wall down, didn't they? Only one of them. Ms. O poured herself a glass of sweet tea and asked, "What do you know about superheroes, Andrea?" "They fight evil?" Andrea looked back at Ms. O with a raised eyebrow to indicate that the superhero ball was now back in her court. "You're wondering if all this is real right now, ain't you? It's real as mosquitoes in August. There are forces in this world bent on destruction, and this organization is often the only thing standing in their way." "I get it." She did not get it. Ms. O shook her head. "You don't get it. You're thinking this crazy woman in a Hawaiian shirt from Fair Oaks County, Georgia, destroyed my beautiful wall, drugged me, brought me here in my pajamas, and now she's telling me fairy tales. But this ain't a fairy tale business. It's a cash business. You're confused again. You thought all those superheroes worked for the government." Andrea nodded. She had forgotten that she was wearing pajama pants and a T-shirt with her middle school's name across the chest. She would have felt embarrassed about still being dressed this way in the early afternoon, but this is what you get when you kidnap people for job interviews. "The U.S. government, bless its heart, couldn't run a candy store in Hungrytown," Ms. O continued. "I don't mean anything by talking about candy, sweetheart. You are a beautiful Zoftig young woman."
"I'll take it."
"The government, they just allocate funds out to the states. The states decide how to use that money to protect their citizens from the dark forces of the universe. Sweet tea is looking a little low, no? Refill?"
Ms. O gave a delightful shake to the pitcher. "Yes, please."
Ms. O gracefully poured more sweet tea into Andrea's glass. "The states will often pass the money and the decision on how to use it to the counties or the cities, meaning there are thousands of contracts out there for superhero teams. What we do here at the Corporation for Ultrahuman Protection is submit bids for those contracts. If we win, we get the money and our superheroes protect that city, county, or state. Make sense?"
Andrea nodded.
"Now, I'm Vice President of Operations for the Corporation for Ultrahuman Protection, which we all just call CUP. I'm VP of Operations, but really I run this whole ship. I force results out of R&D, look over all of our major bids, make sure our overhead isn't out of control, and I stay on top of our most valuable employees."
"The superheroes,"
Andrea stated. "No, the sales reps. What I need is an administrative assistant who will be my right hand, someone who gets work done before I need to ask for it, keeps my schedule orderly, and deals with all the hooey I don't need to. I'm a never-ending thunderstorm, and I need you to be my valley that takes all my rain and just grows beautiful flowers. That's a phrase we got in Fair Oaks County, Georgia."
"I can be that person."
Andrea was relatively certain this was a lie. She had never been a person to be ahead of her own work, much less anyone else's. There was a pizza box sitting in her kitchen that had become a mystery. What were its origins? What lay inside? Was it there when she moved in?
"Course you can, Andrea. I looked over your file. A degree and two useless majors from an Ivy League school. Years spent working low-paying jobs just long enough to pay for plane tickets to Europe, where you'd work until your visa ran out, and then come back to repeat the process all over again. You thought about grad school, but you chose to live life rather than keep studying it. But now you're 28, your student loans are overwhelming you, your parents are Haitian immigrants who worked their whole lives to give their children the opportunities to make it big in this world, and now you feel guilty for letting them down. So, You're ready to give up your dreams of sipping coffee along the Seine while discussing the Magyar Rebellion with other intellectuals and actually find a job that will pay you enough to make it worthwhile. Andrea was about to correct her that she was only 27, but then she remembered it was May. So, yes, 28. I didn't put any of that in my resume, Andrea noted.
No, not your resume. It's in your file. I know you probably think you won't really be great in this job, but you will be. You'll make good money. You'll go a little crazy with all the work I'm going to throw at you, but you will be that beautiful valley.
I'm in. Andrea realized as she spoke that she had not asked for a definition of good money. But she had never felt so accepted as she was by Persephone O, VP of Operations.
Course you are.
Chapter 2. Kermit Waltz, Human Resources Associate. Andrea was riding on sunshine in a very abstract sense. In a literal sense, she was riding a standing motorized personal transporter alongside the transporter of Kermit Waltz, Human Resources Associate. She could feel the wind blow through her hair and the power of employment run through her veins.
No, Mom and Dad, let me buy pizza tonight. You want toppings? Let's go crazy and get extra toppings.
Sure, this was not the life she had envisioned. No, she wasn't putting her passion for and knowledge of European history to use. No, she hadn't followed through on her plans to go back to her parents' homeland and build a school or help women get loans to start businesses.
Sure. What had she done?
Oh, no. 7 minutes in, and already it was all falling apart. Then again, 7 minutes might have been the longest she had ever gone making a life decision before being filled with regret. 2 minutes had been spent changing into a charming pantsuit Ms. O had given her as a signing bonus, but that still counted. She smiled before again debating if she had thrown away her whole life. Had Kermit just asked her a question?
Gotcha,
she answered. How long had he been talking? Kermit nodded appreciatively. They motored past order processing and their views of the Hudson River.
You know what keeps America secure from all the invading aliens, crazed billionaires bent on world domination, and mutant armies? Logistics and synergy.
Most definitely, Andrea agreed. Had she signed anything yet?
What if she ran to the elevator right now?
Kermit smiled broadly. A clean-cut man with Hawaiian shirt tucked into khakis. He looked early 40s, a man who gave every appearance of carefully planning each individual move in his chess game of life to end up here. Human Resources Associate. Didn't you ever dream, Kermit? Kermit continued.
Everyone sees the final efforts of all the work done by our entire team. They see hostages freed, monuments returned, villains defeated. They don't see all of our departments working toward these goals, but every step is just as necessary as the last one. King Tiger doesn't sink his mighty teeth into the exterminator just before he sets off his chemical bomb that would have turned all of the residents of Orlando, Florida into mosquitoes unless we do everything correctly here. King Tiger wouldn't have been there on time if he spent his days worried that he didn't understand his health insurance benefits. What if the Cup attack ship had broken down? What if his anti-gravity boots had not been picked up at the warehouse? What if his supervisor had not given him proper feedback during his twice-yearly review? What if traffic and distribution had not properly coordinated his travel down to Florida to assist the local crew? And worst of all, what if our sales rep for the Southeast had lost the Orange County, Florida bid? What if we let some other superhero company get that contract? One that doesn't work as hard and run as efficiently as we do.
Andrea nodded.
That would be horrible.
These are the things that keep me up at night. Luckily, our sales representatives are the best. They're our greatest heroes. Coming up on your right is customer service.
Andrea waved at the 7 employees sitting at their desks, all engaged in phone calls.
An elderly woman put her hand in the receiver.
New employee? She asked.
Yes, answered Kermit. Andrea is taking over as Ms. O's administrative assistant.
Is Sean dead?
Sadly, yes, killed this morning. Wrecking ball swung by a construction crane meant for Ms. O. It was the work of uncivil engineer.
I always liked Sean. Nice to meet you, Andrea.
The woman returned to her phone call saying,
So, your city hall is still levitating? Okay, we can send someone out.
Andrea stopped motoring and Kermit had to reverse back.
Don't worry about it. They loved Sean and they'll love you.
Was it weird to be comforted by the knowledge her job was life-threatening? If someone told her they made partner at her law firm, she could counter with the fact that she could be murdered at any moment. Andrea moved her transporter forward. She had expected the office to somehow be more high-tech. Robot employees, jetpacks, lasers for some reason. This was a standard office. Kermit had explained that Cup took up the top 5 floors of this building, whose address may never be spoken. No one besides Ms. O went up to the top floor, where the top executives worked, making her the highest-ranking employee anyone had ever seen with their eyes. Her office sat one floor below with the rest of the sales and operations team. One could find customer service, marketing, human resources, and traffic dispatch the next floor down. Research and development took up the bottom 2 floors. What were the actual floor numbers in relation to the rest of the building? Inconsequential, according to Kermit.
The last department here on this floor is Human Resources, my home. Feel free to come by any time with any questions or concerns. We have never had a complaint of sexual or racial harassment, but I am all studied up on how to handle those, and I'd be excited to help.
Their transporters rounded a corner right into a muscular, 8-foot-tall, red-bearded man in denim overalls, a Hawaiian shirt over a lumberjack long sleeve, and a gray knit cap carrying an enormous chopping axe that barely fit in the hallway. The blade itself might have been 4 feet in length.
Why am I not on the 401k?
The man bellowed in an impossibly deep voice.
Hi, the Big Axe. Andrea, this is the Big Axe. The Big Axe, this is Ms. O's new administrative assistant, Andrea.
A pleasure, Mr. The Big Axe.
The Big Axe did not acknowledge Andrea.
I am the Big Axe! I swing down my mighty arm and chop down evil! This company should match my 401k contributions!
You are able to start contributing now, the Big Axe, Kermit responded, but you need to be here 16 months before you receive matching.
I deserve matching. I ran the numbers last night, and I am not where I need to be for my retirement plans. I am the Big Axe.
Hands are tied. Kermit held out his hands. The Big Axe now chose to look over at Andrea, who shrugged and said,
Sounds like you got some Big Axe problems, because you're making a Big Axe deal about it.
Instantly, she felt as though she had overstepped her bounds, as she did so often when meeting people at new jobs, new schools, and funerals. Man, she had really made that funeral awkward. The Big Axe lifted his right eye.
I like you.
Chapter 3. Teleporter Joe, Superhero in Training. Days passed. Patterns started to emerge out of the chaos. The glut of information started to shed its excess and reveal the objective truths hidden beneath. Experimentation, repetitive and purposeful, now provided data points that could be viewed not as a random series of dots, but as a map pointing in a single direction. Andrea was relatively certain how Ms. O took her coffee. Ms. O asked for very little, leaving Andrea sitting and waiting for long stretches, alternating between terror that a hidden task demanded her attention and daydreams of Chancellor Metternich and the chambermaid.
Questions pestered her mind. Did Ms. O want coffee? How did she take her coffee? Did she want tea? Did she eat lunch? It was almost lunch. Should she order lunch or no? What about allergies? Andrea's desk sat in a lobby outside of Ms. O's office, and she had rummaged through that desk, looking for hints from Sean, her predecessor, murdered in his prime while wearing a Hawaiian shirt, most likely. She found little, not even menus hinting to the type of cuisine Ms. O preferred, or pictures of her drinking jet black coffee and eating a samosa. There was more. Emails constantly flooded into Ms. O's inbox, which Andrea had access to. Should Andrea flag important messages for her attention? What about the many phone calls? Whom did she connect to Ms. O, and whom did she send to voicemail? The first step in answering the many questions pestering Andrea was for her to imagine herself as a highly capable, confident person. This new Andrea would need to risk failure in order to run experimental trials. Finally, the psych minor would pay off. She started with coffee, placing two cups on Ms. O's desk, one labeled calf and one labeled decaf. Ms. O drank the calf 6 minutes later without comment. Only a start. Over the next few days, she experimented with different variations. Black coffee, coffee with cream and sugar, just sugar, sugar substitute, honey, espresso, cappuccino, flat white, and many different types of tea. And she went back to decaf because what if it had just been a weird day? Sometimes as many as 7 coffee mugs sat on Ms. O's desk awaiting judgment. The resulting chart she created looked like pointillist art, but it showed the complexities of which coffee Ms. O drank at which times of the day and how long she took to finish them. After 15 full days of trials, Andrea felt certain that Ms. O preferred coffee with cream in the morning and then an espresso in the afternoon. This discovery was the most self-satisfying of her professional life, pushing the realization that the hotel in Prague where she worked the front desk was actually a brothel to second place. Food proved to be a bigger challenge. Could she order food for Ms. O? Did restaurants deliver to numberless floor in secret building? A cafeteria on the 3rd floor offered numerous above-average lunch options, but Ms. O never expressed any intention or desire to go there. Searching the trash for receipts from old meals proved fruitless. Calling takeout restaurants and immediately asking for the usual to be taken to the place also failed. 3 days, and she had never seen Ms. O eat. Was she killing Ms. O through malnutrition? Was this how mothers felt when their newborns would not latch onto their breasts? As she started to give up hope, Trevor in marketing sent Ms. O an email with the subject, "Milwaukee under attack by man-sized beavers who are also fire." Andrea flagged the email, and immediately Ms. O called her in. "And?" Ms. O asked. Andrea walked slowly backward out of the office to her own desk and started searching the company's internal database, CupNet, for information. She returned minutes later. "Milwaukee is under contract with another superhero company, Superbia." Ms. O gave a slow nod. "Right now, Andrea, you're like the child telling the preacher where his flask is." Assuming that meant she already knew this, Andrea retreated again only to come back a few minutes later. 5 buildings destroyed, hundreds injured, dozens missing. Superbia originally sent out their hero, the lightning bug, but he failed and they had to send in a backup team, which is now fighting the fire beavers or the beaver fires, depending on your perspective. No response. 3 minutes later, "Superbia is in year 2 of a 3-year contract with the city of Milwaukee. Marketing is working on a package to send them to prep for the next bid, given this failure. Also, the lightning bug has already been let go by Superbia." Ms. O smiled.
Andrea took a stab. So, I will go call Human Resources and tell them to keep an eye out for his resume. Ms. O nodded. And why would we want a fallen superhero, sweetheart?
Because he can give us all the dirt on Superbia.
Fox wants to know where the hens are. He best find an angry rooster. Order me a pastrami sandwich from Lev's Diner. Tell him it's Ms. O. He knows how to find us.
With help from her coffee experiment and the Fire Beavers of Milwaukee, Andrea felt herself improving every day. She could sense what Ms. O cared about and what she trusted others to handle. She also felt secure enough in her employment to spend some of the money she had earned. She bought a toaster. Not one of those boring rinky-dink toasters, one that had a touchscreen and could cook a pizza. There was even a picture of a happy couple on the box cooking a pizza. Andrea had made it. Near the end of her third week of work, she felt confident disturbing Ms. O to tell her, "Teleporter Joe is behind schedule." Ms. O walked out the door and Andrea followed.
"Don't give me promises. Farmer can promise his cows the moon, but I'm still eating hamburgers. You get me?"
Research and development space was broken up between a lab, a medical office for surgical procedures, and a testing space surrounded by 3 feet of concrete and secured behind multiple blast doors. The testing area accounted for the majority of the space, both in terms of area and volume, taking up 2 floors. Andrea had only briefly glimpsed the testing area, but saw a Jackson Pollock-esque collection of burn marks and bloodstains. Luckily, the meeting was in the lab. Andrea learned over her first few weeks that CUP employed 4 different types of superheroes. Mutated humans, known as muters. Aliens. Biologically enhanced humans, humes. And adepts. Adepts were normal people who could use special tools and equipment better than most. Kitchen Sink, for instance, was a former Romanian gymnast, a lovely young lady named Cosmina, who piloted the mechanical suit which fired seemingly randomized projectiles. Sometimes Kitchen Sink fired bullets, sometimes missiles, and sometimes t-shirts. Teleporter Joe was not an adept. He was not an alien. He was not a mutant. He should have been a biologically enhanced human, but that was only a work in progress. Dr. Srinivasan, director of research and development, pled his case.
"Miss O, you have to understand.
Son, a real good way to find a high heel inside you is to tell me what I have to do."
Dr. Srinivasan was young, early 30s, but he could easily pass for 14. The oversized glasses and oversized lab coat did not help.
"I apologize," he said. "We are dealing with an extremely complicated world, more of physics than biology. There's not simply a part of the body that can just be tweaked to allow it to teleport. We are focusing on the proposition that the actual subatomic components, the smallest units of matter, do not exist in a real permanent state, but rather one of probability, that they might not actually have a location until we seek one."
With a deep breath, Ms. O proclaimed,
"Doc, I'm getting more bored than an armadillo at a suntanning convention. I'm almost there, I promise. So, for Teleporter Joe, we have implanted a device that changes the probability. We are, in essence, altering the answer key on the math test of the universe. So every individual speck of matter instantaneously shifts itself into another possible location, one it would have previously thought impossible. And it has worked."
Ms. O coughed accusatorily.
"Just not perfectly." "Doc, what is the probability of all the subatomic particles in your explanation relocating themselves into an honest answer about why Teleporter Joe isn't ready yet?"
Teleporter Joe, seated a few feet behind Dr. Srinivasan, interjected,
"Allow me to explain.
Joe, dressed in his wrinkled jeans and pit-stained white t-shirt, stood up.
See, I'm just a normal guy from Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, but I think I can break this down.
Joe had explained to Andrea when she first met him that he decided to allow scientists to experimentally augment his body because his boss at the arcade was a real jerk and the kids there kept throwing quarters at him. Andrea's most recent job in the States had been at a frozen custard in the Queens Center Mall, so she had nodded knowingly at this story.
Yes, please, Ms. O encouraged.
Joe walked over to Ms. O and said,
See, I can teleport, but...
And he lay his right hand on Andrea. As she began to tell him to move his hand, she found that she was no longer in the lab. She saw the island of Manhattan in front of her, and a small lighthouse to her right.
Aw, crud, said Joe. Yeah, I did that. I totally did.
Teleport us back, Joe.
See, now that's the thing. I can only teleport here. See, we're on Roosevelt Island. It's the island between Queens and Manhattan.
A family sat at a nearby bench, enjoying their hot dogs and soda. Passing them, a couple walked their French bulldog. No one paid any attention to Andrea and teleporter Joe, newly appeared. Andrea reached for her bag, but realized it did not make the trip.
My wallet with my Metro card is back at Cup HQ. I have to walk back to Manhattan.
Joe shook his head.
No. Technically, you gotta walk to Queens and then over the 59th Street Bridge into Manhattan. No direct bridge to Manhattan from here. Jeez, what a dope. I was just about to tell them I can only teleport one place, and that's Roosevelt Island. Also, anyone I touch when I'm teleporting goes with me.
Then you shouldn't have teleported, Teleporter Joe.
It's not my fault. I didn't do it on purpose. It just happens for some reason when I get in.
If you say erection, I will throw you in the East River.
Do you have a better word you would prefer I use?
Andrea turned and walked away, taking purposeful, angry steps south toward the bridge to Queens.
There's one other thing about teleporting, Joe called out.
Andrea ignored him and pressed on, but in a moment she froze. Her stomach growled in anger, and then its contents pushed down, fearful of this furious stomach.
See now what you got there? Joe explained, is what I call teleporter's diarrhea.
Chapter 4. Scott, Salesman. Sometimes a giant alien egg falls out of the sky and changes your life forever. For Andrea, that giant alien egg descended into view as she collected invoices from the inside sales department, the group that worked at Cup HQ, calling out to different government offices, assisting the sales reps in scheduling meetings, and following up on bid requests. It appeared as only a bright speck of orange light at first, but the curious speck became an ominous dot. She found herself caught between concern for her own life, the lives of those she cared about, and the potential cash cow that could be headed Cup's way. This conflict defined employment at Cup. One often heard talk around the hallways such as, Portland has fallen under the control of the evil villain Bucktooth. It's awful and I'm really worried about my second cousins over there, but that also voids Mega Defense's contract and we could really expand our presence in the Pacific Northwest. I have to go pray now, for the lives of those in Portland, not the contract, but also the contract. All of the employees gathered by south-facing windows watching the blur start to take form as voices shouted updates gleamed from their smartphones.
It's an egg! Planetary origin unknown. Trajectory unclear. Those updates ran out quickly and morphed into conjecture. Gotta be headed for Manhattan.
Where else would they send their egg invasion?
Hope it's Manhattan. We've got that contract tied up.
We are in Manhattan. Manhattan is below us and all around us.
Well, I obviously hope it doesn't hit us or anyone we know. Look, I'm not a bad person.
What does it even mean to be a bad person?
Yeah, we're all just human beings struggling to make it in the world, making the best decisions we can.
Andrea had trouble discerning the shape of the egg as it tumbled speedily toward them. Any minute now, that egg would hit something, and this office would either disintegrate beneath her feet or fill with a mad rush of activity in the attempt to profit off it. Painful death or potential bonuses, this was the eternal struggle at a superhero corp with a profit-sharing policy. She felt a rush of adrenaline and briefly considered grabbing a random employee and making out. Save it for the novel, Andrea. Save it for the novel. The egg slowed as it approached and the entire office silenced. Much of their view changed from Manhattan to egg in moments. All they saw was beautiful, glowing purple egg, nearly on a straight line, but just high enough to miss Cup. It passed harmlessly overhead, causing the mass of employees to scramble to the north side of the building. By the time the horde reached a view, the egg had disappeared from their sight, but Ms. O stood scowling in front of them. She spoke two words.
The Bronx.
With far more urgency, the sales crew broke out into a panic sprint back to their desks with a few screams.
Anywhere but the Bronx!
Ms. O looked at Andrea expectantly.
Calling Scott now.
You haven't called Scott yet?
Andrea ran. Scott, the sales representative, account manager for the Northeast. The truth of his origins had been clouded by myth and legend over the years. Some said he was hit by lightning next to a nuclear reactor, and the resulting chemical reactions in his brain created a sales rep unlike any the world had yet seen. Some said a masked sales rep murdered Scott's father when Scott was just a baby, and that Scott lived his life to avenge his father by out-earning his killer. Some said he was born of an alien race that ruled their galaxy through charm and courtesy. Andrea had also heard he got into sales after he gave up on being a musician. While his beginnings were open to conjecture, his achievements at Cup were not. Scott single-handedly defeated a dozen regional superhero companies in his territory. When Baltimore County went up for bid, Scott's supervisors told him to save his time, as Maryland Super Security had owned that territory for years. Scott refused to save his time, saying that he knew nothing about saving. He only knew earning. Baltimore County fell in 15 minutes to Scott. 15 minutes. The county commission canceled the bidding process. No one had ever heard of such a thing. Bucks County, Pennsylvania, Suffolk County, Massachusetts, all of Maine. This was 1 week on the job. When Ms. O offered Scott a promotion that would give him the opportunity to make more money in a supervisory role, Scott politely declined.
They need me out there, he said without elaboration.
With that, he disappeared back into the field to fight all competitors and raise profits. Like most heroes, he had his one weakness, the Achilles heel that stood out like an oil stain on the Mona Lisa. Scott loved jelly donuts. He knew that one day his love might cost him. One wrong bite and that delicious filling would end up not in his belly, but on his tie. And what if he didn't have time to change ties before a big presentation? What would the client say then? The very thought made every employee at the Corporation for Ultra-Human Protection shudder. Would there come a day when their hero fell to a cursed jelly donut? Andrea had never met Scott. Perhaps naively, she thought he might never need to come into the office. But that day had come. Her call reached his voicemail. In his answering message, he said he was sorry to have missed her call. She truly felt he was talking right to her, and that he was genuinely sorry that he had missed her call. The 300 employees who worked at Cup HQ sardined into the conference room built for 50. Ms. O stared silently, waiting for the last person to enter and the door to close.
When that happened, she spoke with grave urgency.
Y'all, that giant glowing egg dropped right in our backyard in the Bronx. Instead of crashing, it is hovering just above center field in Yankee Stadium. This is the largest alien object ever to penetrate our atmosphere.
A few hands shot into the air.
Yes, it's bigger than Charleston in 1996. Please put your hands down.
Hands went down.
We can only assume that whatever is in that egg is ugly, mean, and here to destroy humanity. This is going to be a very large contract. For those of you not tuned in to the sales side of our business, I will explain briefly, but really y'all should be up on everything going on around here. Milkman better know about bottles too, if y'all know what I mean. Most of New York State's superhero defense funding goes to Manhattan, known as New York County for our purposes. This is a lucrative contract that was won back for us by Scott a few years back.
Raucous applause broke out at the mention of the hero and his deeds.
Now, the Bronx has historically received a fraction of that money for its own defense and has chosen to use a local company for the last several contracts. The Superheroes. Lord, that name. They are a lower quality organization that underbid us. With today's events, the United States government has allocated the largest amount ever given out for a single contract, including a special allocation to pay out the remaining 4 months left on the Superheroes contract. So, Bronx County can choose any company it wishes to receive these new funds and fight the alien menace. It could be us. It could be Listen, we all know their name. The problem is, we have no relationships in Bronx County, not even an idea how their bureaucracy works. In short, there are two possibilities. One, we pull off a miracle, win this contract, save the world, have our best year as a company. I can finally afford to build my moon base, and your profit-sharing checks make your eyes pop out. Or two, we lose this contract. We put the fate of mankind in the hands of a less capable corporation, and everyone on the planet dies, including your loved ones. I'm going to have to ask y'all to work overtime. Wolves set their own schedules until the sheep buy rifles, y'all. Every superhero company in the United States is coming here to pitch. We're 10 miles away, but we can't see how to get there because this is our darkest hour. We need all of you, but we really need our brightest light to shine the way. We need Scott.
Mizzo allowed everyone a moment of silent contemplation. Before she could speak again, however, the doors flew open, revealing Scott. In his inoffensive and not too attractive that he's intimidating, in fact, look at the everyman's gut glory. Armored in khakis and a white button-down, no tie, not necessary for the office, he's just one of the guys. Scott took a step in as the mass of adoring co-workers parted before him.
Did, someone call for a salesman?
Gasps. Applause.
Simple. Scott said to Andrea as they turned left onto the 59th Street Bridge. I'm just going to go in there and ask politely for them to give me all of their money, even though they have never opted to work with us before, and they'll say no, and then we can have lunch, right? Scott chuckled. I mean, unless we can pull off some sort of miracle.
It did not go unnoticed that Scott referred to we in terms of this adventure, even though Andrea had only been assigned to drive him. Mizzo explained that the Superheroes had no intention of that contract going to another vendor and would likely be on the lookout for Scott. But would they be on the lookout for Scott in a Glazier's van that read Cartzenal and Sons, driven by Andrea? No, they would not. Mizzo explained that Andrea would drive the van because she needed someone she could trust and also because Andrea was new enough that they would not recognize her as a CUP employee and thus would hesitate before attempting to blow up the van and murder everyone inside of it. Superheroing was a nastier business than organic hog farming, Ms. O had added. She also instructed Andrea not to cross directly from Manhattan into the Bronx, rather by going into Queens and taking the Whitestone Bridge north. In the back of the van sat the mechanized, armored body of Kitchen Sink. Ms. O had ordered its pilot, Cosmina, into action for a demo of Cup's abilities. She had to travel from her home in Staten Island and would meet them there.
"Hey, working with Ms. O, you ever catch sight of the execs?" Scott asked.
"Nope."
"Too bad. I was really hoping someone knew what they looked like. My boss is the president of sales, but I've never met him. He only communicates to the salespeople through dreams."
"Sounds a little scary."
"Nah, it's actually really efficient. You wake up and your meeting's over with. Conference calls get weird, though. Where are you from?"
"I grew up in Richmond Hill, in Queens."
"Great Caribbean food there. Big fan."
"Yeah, my folks are Haitian."
Scott's face bloomed into a smile.
"Love Haiti. Did a volunteer program during college to build a school down there. Best thing I've ever done in my life."
"I live in Astoria now, though."
"Oh, Astoria! The beer garden there. That's where I met my wife. Magical place."
"Yeah, it's nice. I have yet to meet the love of my life there."
Scott shook his head. "No, don't do it there. Space out your life events geographically. That way, when you meet people from different places, you can connect with them. I met my wife in Queens. We got married in Philadelphia. We live in Connecticut. And I just took my son fishing for the first time in Boston. 3-hour drive. But now I have a Boston story when I go there. Volunteering at a soup kitchen in Hartford next weekend."
"That's smart thinking, Scott."
"Thank you, Andrea. The secret to my sales success is that I am just desperate to make people like me."
Andrea exited off the bridge at 21st Street in Queens. She continued driving up to Astoria Boulevard and turned right to head toward the Grand Central Parkway. For the whole trip, down the Grand Central to the Van Wyck Expressway and the Whitestone Bridge into the Bronx, Scott was a delightful companion. This was the safe part of the trip, where no one attempted to murder Scott.
"It is not my fault," Cosmina enunciated precisely over Scott's phone.
She had learned English in her mid-teens and spoke it perfectly, with no accent, but each word sounded like a school project she really wanted to get an A on.
"How bad is it?"
Scott asked, opening the back doors of the van. They had reached the Bronx County Courthouse, home of the Defense Allocation Fund Oversight Committee, which was really just one woman, Irene Clemente. Scott had met with Irene only once, a few years before, but he had called, emailed, and sent cookie bouquets every Christmas. Every time the contract came up for bid, Irene chose the superheroes over Cup, and every year she still received a tasty assortment of chocolate chip, macadamia nut, and peanut butter cookies.
"You can look for yourself."
Cosmina flipped the camera on her smartphone to reveal cars stretched for miles on the highway leading to the Verrazano Bridge.
"It is a parking lot."
Scott squinted as he leaned in toward his phone, and Andrea could see what caught his attention.
"Golden Jacket."
The human-bee hybrid zoomed closer until it was flying directly overhead, carrying a loudspeaker. As it passed above Cosmina, they could briefly hear,
"Superbia, your friendly, benevolent superhero protectors, is investigating a possible event
And then it faded into the distance. Superbia, Cup's largest rival, controlled all of New Jersey and Staten Island.
"Cosmina, they knew you were coming and they shut down the bridge. Get out of there if you can."
Cosmina sneered.
"This was a waste of day," she said as she hung up.
Scott shook his head.
"I really feel for all those poor people who are stuck in traffic just because Superbia is pulling these shenanigans."
Andrea could feel his empathy. She checked her phone and looked up with a smile.
Ms. O says King Tiger made it to the Bronx, so we'll have one for the presentation.
King Tiger's not coming here. No time to explain. You're going to have to get in the suit.
Andrea looked at kitchen sink lying in the back of the van. Hawk-like talons extended from giant armored feet, muscular robot arms with giant cannons perched atop each hand, imposing turrets mounted behind each shoulder, massive armored head, tiny space for a human to fit inside.
That suit was constructed for a 95-pound gymnast. I am not a gymnast.
Scott looked at the suit and looked at Andrea.
Pretty sure it'll work. And we're out of other options. I know you're afraid, but that's okay. When we get back to Cup, this will just be an amusing anecdote to share.
Andrea nodded and climbed into the back of the van. Kitchen Sink's arms were at its sides, and the entire machine split open to allow its pilot to climb within. Its tiny pilot, with her thin, toned arms and trim waist. Andrea, who had never won a silver medal in the uneven bars, stuck her rear end into the midpoint of the mech, where a tiny Romanian butt belonged. She did not fit. She shook and pushed until the suit gave enough to allow her most of the way in.
Almost there, Scott encouraged. Hey! Jelly donuts!
There's no time for donuts!
Andrea called out, but Scott did not respond. Andrea lay back, allowed gravity to do its bit, and fell into the suit, which began to blink and whir.
Crap. Crap, crap.
Kitchen Sink will fight!
Played an automatic message. In an instant, every opening snapped shut, compressing Andrea like a slug crushed to goo in the hand of a pitiless 9-year-old. Parts of her body adjusted and pushed into the few open spaces in ways that were as unpleasant as they were surprising.
"This thing is crushing my vagina," she said,
and could immediately hear the voice modulator convert her voice into that of Kitchen Sink's intense, ferocious bass.
"This thing is crushing my vagina!"
Now sounded like an announcement at the world's weirdest monster truck rally. She pushed up and hit her head on the top of the van, then rolled onto her stomach and pushed herself out of the van legs first. Having no sense of her own space, she mistimed her descent, caught her legs together, and tumbled to the ground, smacking her head on the van door. The scene could only have looked like a poorly executed robot breech berth. Andrea got to her robot feet and looked around. Incomprehensible readings and monitors appeared in her vision. She did not, however, see Scott. Across Fordham Road, she located a banner that read, "Best Jelly Donuts in the Bronx," above Adebo's Bakery. She checked both ways for traffic, which she felt was more a favor to the cars than herself in her killer robot suit, and bounded across the street. While her body ached, her steps felt free and powerful. She sensed she could jump atop a 2-story building if pressed to do it. She remembered there were rockets that fired out of the back that could shoot her high into the air, but that was not necessary. The challenge came when she got to the door. Her robot fingers measured around 8 inches long, but were not built to open doors. She flipped awkwardly at the handle with no luck. Not giving up, she extended her robot pinky, slipped it into the narrow space, and pulled. The door opened, and she squeezed her body in. A giant bull/man snarled and prepared to gore Scott, aided by 2 teenage kids holding Scott by his arms.
"Kitchen Sink!" Scott yelled. "Now you're in trouble!"
Andrea took stock of her situation for a moment and screamed in absolute terror, which the suit converted into a monstrous war cry. The 2 young accomplices, both clad in Bronx Bull t-shirts, cowered back a bit. Bronx Bull himself stood as tall as the big axe, but with muscles designed by science, like a brilliant chemist who was also a total bro. In torn jean shorts and no shirt, Bronx Bull defiantly puffed out his massive chest. Human hands extended from his tree trunk arms, but Andrea saw hooves instead of feet.
Standing up from his previous all-fours position, he turned toward Andrea, revealing a broad face with green human eyes and a human mouth, but a bull nose and horns that now punctured the drop ceiling. He stomped his right hoof.
"This is the superhero's territory," he growled.
"Let him go!"
Andrea's voice wavered, but Kitchen Sinks did not.
"This man was trying to rob this store."
Andrea could see the setup. Just in case Scott snuck past them, they lay a jelly trap right by the honeypot. Mixed metaphor? Perfect metaphor?
"Let him go!"
Andrea screamed. Andrea had hoped she might scare off the Bronx Bull, but his mouth turned up into a smile, as though he had wanted to fight a mechanized administrative assistant all day and finally had the chance. She had only a few moments to guess how this suit fired anything.
"The triggers are literally under your trigger fingers," Scott explained.
"I would have figured it out,"
Kitchen Sink called back. Bronx Bull tilted his head in confusion.
"How could you not know?"
Bullets. Bullets everywhere. The two hoods raised their hands to cover their faces, and Scott rolled under a table. She saw the two hoods fall in pain and turned to the Bronx Bull, but the projectiles just bounced off him.
"Not your lucky day, Kitchen Sink. You're firing rubber bullets."
"Hey, man," said one of the kids. "They really hurt."
"I'm the Bronx Bull. They do not hurt me."
Bronx Bull laughed maliciously, and Andrea let go of the trigger. Losing interest in her, he turned to Scott, who began to scramble out from under the table. Bronx Bull charged, and Scott leaped, attempting to dodge to the left, but the bull's right horn caught him and sliced across his stomach as Scott bounced off. Scott lay there bleeding profusely right through his white shirt, but still calm. He stared down Bronx Bull and called to Andrea.
"Try the other trigger."
Andrea pressed down with her left trigger, and out from her left cannon extended a bright red cape. Bronx Bull turned and his eyes filled with instant rage. With two steps, he launched himself across the room, aimed right for the cape, which Andrea lifted in the millisecond before impact. Unable to slow his momentum, he slammed into the wall. His horns went straight through, trapping him. Too dazed to pull himself free, he pawed at the ground uselessly. His accomplices ran out through a back exit.
"Pick me up," Scott instructed.
Andrea ran over and scooped up the sales rep and darted for the front door. She pawed at the handle.
"You can just knock down the door."
"Right." With a shove, the door unhinged and fell before them. They could hear Bronx Bull groaning as she ran out, only looking back to see his two horns sticking out of the exterior wall into open air. In front of them stood the Bronx County Courthouse.
"In there!"
Scott pointed toward the men's bathroom, but Andrea hesitated.
"No one can tell you're a woman. You're in a giant mech suit."
With that, she bounded toward the door, stopped short, and then fumbled at the doorknob with her giant robot hands. Scott meekly moved his arm and pushed the door open.
"I thought I had to turn the knob."
"No, fair mistake. You just pushed this one."
A young man in a sharp suit washing his hands at a sink turned to see an armored weaponized robot carrying a bleeding man in its arms. The man shook his head.
"One of them days." "One of them days," Scott echoed.
The man shook his hands 12 times over the sink, grabbed a paper towel, folded it in half, and wiped down his hands.
"I got a system for hand drying," he said. "Get some dry, only needs one sheet. You have a nice day."
Andrea looked down to see Scott taking off his shirt. The wound had not yet clotted, and she could see that the bullhorn had punched a half inch into Scott. She felt completely and utterly helpless.
"Point your right arm cannon at me," he said.
This feels like the end of Rin Tin Tin, she protested.
No, trust me, I've done tons of demos with this suit. It's basically an intuitive three-dimensional printer. This should probably work, maybe.